It is Friday, February 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump accuses top FBI and justice officials of politicizing intelligence information.
And that certainly can be seen as prepping his base for a release of the memo.
A new report says most terrorists do not act in isolation and are often inept. And it's Super Bowl weekend. Will large groups of people gathering together help spread the flu? We have a report. It's all ahead. President Trump is accusing the leadership of America's top law enforcement agencies of abusing their investigative authority for partisan ends. In tweets Friday, Trump accused the leaders of the FBI and the Justice Department of politicizing the sacred investigative process in favor of Democrats and against Republicans. There are new news reports. Mr. Trump has approved the release of a classified memo written by the Republican chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman describes to me Trump's Friday tweets.
He was up early in the morning on Twitter and blasting the Justice Department and FBI, accusing them of politicizing the process of the Russia investigation. Of course, that's a line that he's been taking, and that certainly can be seen as prepping his base for a release of the memo. Now, we don't know for certain that he will authorize its release, but all indications are that he's been leaning in that direction all week. And so what will happen is the memo, which came over to the White House in a slightly modified form, would then go back to Congress, and then it would be up to Congress to release this. And this is something that's never happened before. So we're really in uncharted territory. And of course, there's been tremendous opposition from the Democrats, including those on the House Intelligence Committee, and even a couple of Republican senators and Republican Congress members saying that this is not a good idea and that this is looking more like a political move than anything else.
And it's not known at this time whether the entire memo will be released or portions of it will be considered still classified.
Right. There has been discussion about redacting, removing some of the material. And what has upset the Justice Department, the FBI, and the Democrats is they're saying that this memo is very amateurish, that it cherry-picks information, that it is misleading. There is another Democratic memo that some would like to see released to balance this out. If it was up to the FBI and the Justice Department, none of this would come out at all because they fear that this is going to have very serious ramifications.
And this is all occurring as there certainly continues to be a conflict, if not a feud, between Mr. Trump and the FBI and the Justice Department, and including Christopher Wray, who Mr. Trump appointed as director of the FBI, who's expressed his concerns about all this.
This is really unprecedented to have a feud like this between the president of the United States and essentially what is his top domestic intelligence service. And how far this will go after this remains to be seen. A lot of people are very worried about this. There's talk of a constitutional crisis if this leads to the firing of the number two person at the Justice Department. And then the concern is among the liberals and those that have concerns about the whole process, that could lead to the firing of the special counsel because the Justice Department's head, Jeff Sessions, has recused himself in all matters dealing with the Russia investigation. So this would be a way to get people in that would be seen as more pliable to the president, could really limit the scope of the investigation. And the big concern, of course, among many in the West Wing is that what the special counsel is really looking at now, if not some sort of criminal collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians during the 2016 election, is really what would be considered the cover-up, that the president was engaged in what would be called obstruction of justice, and that people working for him may have lied to FBI investigators, may have perjured themselves.
Another parallel to Watergate.
Absolutely. And that is what is most concerning to a lot of the Republicans. What's, I think, different so far is that during the Watergate process, that there were Republicans who eventually decided that the president had committed crimes and they voted for impeachment. We're not there yet with this. And we also have a situation where the Republicans control the House of Representatives, the Senate. They're being much more aggressive in fighting back. And what may happen later this year with the congressional elections, because everybody in the House of Representatives is up for re-election, that if the Democrats were to take control, then there would likely be a move towards impeachment. But I think what we should remind everybody is Bill Clinton was impeached, but he was not removed from office. That would take a two-thirds vote in the Senate, which everyone sees as extremely unlikely to happen. So even if Donald Trump were to be impeached by a democratically controlled House, perhaps he would be very defiant and wear that as a badge of honor.
VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman. Well, joining me on the line is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, I thought we would take a break this Friday from memos and talk of impeachment and that sort of thing. And, of course, this weekend coming up is the Super Bowl on Sunday. And so lots of people using the hashtag, just hashtag Super Bowl on Facebook and social media. Here's just a few examples. Darren Revelle notes that during the Super Bowl, the Empire State Building will be lit in the color of the team in the lead in real time. And he goes on to add, I'm sure New Yorkers are thrilled that their building will be lit up for the Eagles and the Patriots. Here's a comment from Danny Perkins. Just took a call from a guy who said he won't be watching the Super Bowl in part because after 9/11, it was an NFL conspiracy to make Patriots look good. So kind of some trash talking out there as well. And this other quick, I noted that in Texas, I think it is, let's see, I'm going to just go down here. In Texas, this is an actual real story. A man named Robert Clyde Drew passed away recently, and his family put in his obituary in the newspaper, Robert Clyde Drew, beloved husband, father, papa, drew his last breath January 25th, mainly we suspect to prevent him from having to watch the Patriots and the Eagles in the Super Bowl. So a lot of people just, I think, having some good-natured fun with that hashtag today.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here's some of the top news stories that are trending. Afghanistan's president says the Afghan Taliban is headquartered in Pakistan. Fidel Castro's eldest son commits suicide. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visits Mexico amid strained relations over immigration and trade. And the U.S. Groundhog predicts six more winters of winter weather here in North America. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab in Maryland has confirmed NASA's Image satellite, missing for 12 years, is the one that was rediscovered by an amateur astronomer on January 20th. According to his blog, amateur astronomer Scott Tilley of British Columbia, Canada, was performing a radio sky scan, hoping to find data on the recent launch of the SpaceX Zuma spacecraft. Conducting a quick identity scan of the radio signals, he found that it came from a satellite whose ID was 2000-017A, which belonged to the Imager for Magnetopause to Aurora Global Exploration, or IMAGE. Launched on March 25, 2000, IMAGE studied the global response of the Earth's magnetosphere to changes in the solar wind. NASA lost contact with the satellite on December 18, 2005. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we get country music news from the recent Grammy Awards. The term lone wolf has become part of our vocabulary as the terror threat has evolved from large-scale attacks to individuals seemingly radicalized in relative isolation. But a new report claims the lone wolf typology is highly misleading and can even be counterproductive in the fight against terror. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
March 2017, a single attacker rams his van into pedestrians on London's Westminster Bridge, killing four, before fatally stabbing a police officer. 3 months later, a man drove a truck into worshippers outside a mosque in North London. In October, Stephen Paddock opened fire on crowds at a Las Vegas music festival, killing 58 people. Weeks later, a man drove his van into cyclists in New York, killing eight. Just some of the recent attacks described by politicians and media as lone wolf terrorism. But the term is unhelpful, argues terror expert Paul Gill, the co-author of a recent study that looked at 100 recent attacks around the globe.
Radicalization rarely happens in a vacuum. It's usually done and facilitated by interactions with other people, be it face-to-face or be it in an online environment. Around about 60% of them tell people, friends, family members, what their plans are.
Police say that description fits Manchester suicide bomber Salman Ramadan Abedi, who carried out the attack alone but told others of his plans. Gill argues the wolf moniker is also wrong.
Which kind of gives them an image of being these kind of crafty, living by their wits, thing that should be feared. Whereas really, the vast majority of them are quite inept. They make a lot of operational mistakes. Many of them have histories of criminality, engagement in violence. Many of them have history of mental health problems.
That allows intelligence services to detect and stop many attacks. Those that are not intercepted make news headlines, where the use of the lone wolf label drives the radicalization trajectory, argues Gill.
For many of them, they're seeking a status, an identity, to be seen as a big man, to be seen as a tough man, for their image to get remembered for a long period of time and to be idolized by other people. So in fact, when the media starts inflating their image afterwards, it's doing the job that they're looking for.
Gill says with much radicalization and communication taking place online, social media companies must be quicker in taking down material like bomb-making videos that aid radicalized individuals in carrying out attacks. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Well, as we heard earlier, American-style football's championship Super Bowl is being held in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Sunday. It's the biggest U.S. football event of the year. Millions of people will watch it on TV, but up to a million more from all over the nation are expected to attend Super Bowl-related events in person. Now, with widespread flu throughout the U.S., some are wondering if the Super Bowl is a perfect event to spread this virus. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
The teams have arrived and they're training for the big day. Minneapolis, host of the Super Bowl, has turned its convention center into an arena where kids can test their football skills. Because of widespread flu in the U.S., some reports have compared these venues to a giant petri dish where the virus can flourish. Minnesota already has a lot of flu activity, and people can spread the virus even before they show symptoms. Chris Ayersman is an epidemiologist with the Minnesota Department of Public Health.
Any time that you have large groups of people congregating in enclosed spaces, you know, it always offers an opportunity for more efficient, I guess, sharing of germs.
Volunteers disinfect equipment that kids use at pre-Super Bowl events so the flu doesn't spread. Julie Dietlein was at first concerned that her son could come down with a virus. But she relaxed when she saw how thoroughly the equipment is being disinfected.
They've been wiping everything down, sanitizing it before the kids use it.
But large gatherings are not the only places with an increased risk for spreading a virus. Dr. Jeff Kwong has completed a newly released study of influenza at the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences.
Even going to someone's house to watch the game on TV, you know, you're gathering with people. And, you know, we know that people, when they're coughing and sneezing, or there's a recent study showing even just breathing, you could be transmitting virus.
Kwong was the lead author of a new study that shows that respiratory viruses, especially influenza, can affect the heart, something doctors had suspected for a long time.
What we showed was that you're 6 times more likely to have a heart attack during the week after being tested and testing positive for influenza infection.
Those most at risk, people over the age of 65. Kwong is hoping the study can save lives.
If we can prove that influenza triggers heart attacks, then there's a certain percentage of heart attacks that could be prevented through getting flu shots.
Back in Minnesota, public health officials are telling people attending the football game to try to avoid close contact with sick people, to wash their hands often, avoid touching their eyes and noses, and if they haven't gotten their flu shot, to get it, because the flu season is not yet over. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Grammys took place on Sunday, what took many in the country music community by surprise. Nikki Strong of VOA1 is here with the details. So, Nikki, Chris Stapleton won the most Grammys. That wasn't a surprise, was it?
No, it wasn't a surprise at all. He's the golden child right now. He won Best Country Album for From a Room, Volume 1. He's the first male solo artist to win twice in that category since the category was reintroduced in 1994. He won for Best Country Solo Performance for Either Way and Best Country Song, Broken Halos. I think Chris is in an interesting place because, hands down, he does great work. He has a voice to die for, but he is one of those artists that I find that no matter if you prefer contemporary country music or if you are a purist, people still like Chris Stapleton, and I think that really works to his advantage. And no one can really argue about the quality of his work. For the most part, we all know it's solid, and no one can really argue about how great of a singer he is, you know? So you can't say that his Grammys are not well-deserved, even if you were rooting for someone else. So congratulations to him.
Well, he and Justin Timberlake just released their song together on Justin's new CD.
Yes, they did. It's called Say Something. And it rides that country pop line really well. Like if Chris Stapleton was to do pop, this would be the song he would do. It's the guitars, because the guitars are prominent, it gives it a more country-esque aesthetic, but it's catchy, it's radio friendly, and I could definitely see it getting love on country radio.
It seems like Maren Morris is going pop, especially in light of her performance-length commercial at the Grammys.
I know, that was wild. I was watching this commercial, and I'm like, this is 3 minutes long. This is a music video. This is for Target. It was like either her label and or her management were like, we're going to make sure Maren does a solo performance for the Grammys, even if we have to put in a commercial. Because in the commercial, she's performing on stage. So if you're watching it, you know, subtly, you think she's on stage at the Grammys. She has an album coming out, and I think this is interesting. Her current singles, Rich, and this one that she did the video for, Meet Me in the Middle, it's done with Zedd. And these are pop songs. These are not country pop. These are poppity pop, pop songs. And I was talking with my colleagues at VOA1, and we were like, yeah, this song, especially with Zedd, will definitely get love on the pop side. And in light of how Billboard has changed its algorithm, if this is getting love on the pop side because Maren Morris is considered a country artist, even though the song is pop, it's going to get credited on the Hot Country Songs chart, which I think is unfair, but because it's unfair to other artists who are doing country music for country fans. But how that will change the trajectory of her career is going to be interesting, because that influences airplay. It impacts them on various levels. So I say, watch this space. Will she be the next Taylor Swift? We have yet, you know, to see that, but I'm curious.
Well, Maren Morris was also part of a tribute to the victims of the Las Vegas mass shooting.
Yep, it was a tribute to the Las Vegas mass shooting and Manchester bombing as well. It was her, Brothers Osborne, and Eric Church. Now, unfortunately, we were really surprised by how bad that performance actually was.
Oh, no.
I know. The song was not a good choice, not for their vocals. They did Eric Clapton's Tears in Heaven. I get why they would choose that, but it just didn't. And they have solid vocalists on stage, and it just didn't work for them. And many thought they could have done a country song. It's four country artists up there. So either way, though, the sentiment behind the tribute was touching, and it was greatly appreciated. Another surprise I want to tell you, and okay, that is Hillary Scott of Lady Antebellum. Lady Antebellum was nominated, I think, for 2 Grammys, and she was not there. But we found out the very next day, in the early hours of the morning, she gave birth to twins.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So that's something we can be happy about.
She had a good excuse.
Yes, I think so.
Well, you can hear more music from both the Grammy winners and nominees on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki on Twitter and Facebook at VOA 1 The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Everybody says, say something, say something, say something, say something, say something, and say something. I don't wanna get caught up in the rhythm of it, but I can't help myself. No, I can't help myself. No.
And that is the music of Justin Timberlake and Chris Stapleton. That is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend and watch that Super Bowl.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Poland, said U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, is a great democratic ally of the United States. On his recent visit there, the secretary discussed security, which, as he noted, is always front and center in all of America's international relationships, and none any more important than here in Poland. Poland and the United States are working together through NATO to strengthen Europe's deterrence and defense capabilities. Secretary Tillerson commended Poland for already achieving the commitment of 2% defense spending. Indeed, Poland has set targets that are even above the 2% level, which will benefit Poland as well as the NATO alliance. On other fronts, the U.S. and Poland are increasing their collaboration to confront cyber threats and disinformation, and coordinating support for Ukraine's efforts to uphold its sovereignty and territorial integrity. Like Poland, the United States opposes the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, a new export gas pipeline running from Russia to Europe across the Baltic Sea. The fear is that such a pipeline would increase Europe's dependence on Russian gas and provide billions of dollars of additional revenue to Putin to finance further military buildup on the European Union's borders. Our opposition is driven by our mutual strategic interests, said Secretary Tillerson, and we strongly believe that Poland, having the means, as well as all of Europe, should diversify its energy supply in the interest of long-term security. The U.S. is proud to support Poland's energy diversification and security, including sales of United States-produced liquefied natural gas, as well as support for pipeline proposals that would give Poland and Europe greater access to alternative supplies, such as the Norway to Poland Baltic Natural Gas Pipeline, as well as greater integration through the Three Seas Initiatives. As we've done in the past, said Secretary Tillerson, the United States is proud to stand with the people of Poland today and in the future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.